when you have these days, have them. Get into bed, cry, scream, be angry, turn your phone off. Don't even brush your teeth. Don't shower. Mm. Just lay in a mess. But the important thing is open the curtains, let the sunlight in, and live your life afterwards.
Welcome to The Power Hour, the weekly podcast that will motivate you to pursue your passion and to achieve success. I'm Adrienne Herbert, international speaker, fitness coach, Adidas global ambassador, and entrepreneur. Each week, I'll be talking to today's leading coaches, creatives, change makers, and innovators to find out their daily habits, morning routines, and rules to live by. The Power Hour is all about taking just 1 hour each day to help you improve your life and unlock your full potential. Whether you want to build a business, write a book, run a marathon, or maybe you're just looking for a spark of inspiration, the Power Hour is going to help you get there faster. Yo, hey everyone, welcome back to the Power Hour podcast. Today's guest is one of London's leading fitness trainers. She is an absolute powerhouse and she is no stranger to taking on both mental and physical challenges. She's a motivational speaker, online host, and you may have watched her incredible resilience on the popular Channel 4 show, SAS Who Dares Wins. Welcome to the studio, Esme Gummer.
Thank you very much. Welcome. That was like the best intro ever.
Yeah?
I was sitting there like posing to everything you're saying.
I mean, I feel like you are unstoppable, fearless, badass. I'm so happy to have you here and I feel like the listeners are going to be so pumped and motivated and inspired after this episode.
I actually hope so now as well.
Yeah, get ready.
Let me know.
All right. So, well, let's kick it off with a very big question. So for anyone listening to this episode who might not know you, who you are, your story, your journey, could you please share with us the story of how essentially you went from being once paralysed to now running ultra marathons?
Yeah, and when you put it like that, sounds like it was very easy. That was actually 10 years ago, I think I'm going up to 11 years this year, which actually when I say that, it feels like a completely different life. And even when you're saying then, not walking to ultra marathon, it just sounds like two different people, even for me. But yeah, grew up as a dancer. That was my passion. So always wanted to be a dancer, even to the point I remember being in school and the teacher saying, well, what are you going to do if you can't dance? And I'll be like, I can, I will. And it's actually weird that she said that. I remember being a parents' evening and I was horrible in school. I didn't do my work. I was very academic, but I weren't bothered. And I remember only caring about dance. And my dance teacher said in front of my mum in parents' evening, what are you going to do if you break your back? And I think she'd been injured actually in the past and it had ruined her sort of, you know, dreams. And I remember sitting there being like, I won't.
I mean, and it's very, it was rare.
Yeah, and you're 15 years old and you're just a bit of a brat. So I was like, I won't. And it is mad because I always remember that. Always, and that was a massive lesson, obviously. So yeah, for me, it was always dance. I was always going to be a dancer, performer. That was it for me. And then 6 weeks before I was due to start dance college, I had a hernia, just in my groin, small hernia, and I went to get it repaired. And unfortunately, came out of the operation, I wasn't able to walk, so I was paralysed waist down.
How old were you?
18, just by a month. That's like crucial because had it been a month sooner, I would have been on the children's ward. So actually, because I was 18, I was put on the adults ward, so it was visiting hours. But if it had been a month sooner, it would have been 24-hour with my parents. So that's, I always look at that. That means when people say, how old were you? I think 18, but just. Because don't 17 sound so much younger? 18, you think you got it together. But it was a month, you know. So, yeah, but mental that, you know, I was on the adult ward because I don't know if I would have, you know, come out the way I did. My parents left at 9 p.m. every night and came back 9 a.m. the next morning. So that's 12 hours alone, you know. So, yeah, madness there.
So after the surgery, you should have been routine, should have been fine, should have been simple, but you were paralysed from the waist down. Did they give you, you know, did they give you a cause? Did they say how quickly did they expect you to recover? What was the kind of out verdict then?
It was just really hard, to be honest, because they hadn't actually seen it. Because what happened was I was seizuring in theatre. So they brought me around and I was in the recovery room seizuring. And they don't know if it was because of the anti-sickness drugs or the anaesthetic. And my mum, they brought my mum in and she said, you are surrounded by anaesthetists, where they were actually saying, come look at this. I've never seen this before. So anaesthetists were actually coming in the room, surrounding my bed, just not just to watch. They obviously were trying to do stuff, but they were just, you know, they just couldn't believe it. And they sedated me so much. My mum said they were like putting, you know, sedation into my stomach, left, right, centre. And you just don't know. Could it have been, you know, the reaction to the anaesthetic, reaction to the anti-sickness drugs, the sedation? You don't know what
Something
it was.
Something went wrong.
There was talk of it being a stroke. They didn't know if I'd had a stroke in surgery. They didn't know if this, I'd just seizured and then damaged my spinal cord. There was a lot of talk.
And you'd never had a seizure before?
No, nothing like this. And I had to, I weren't allowed to do anything for a week until they'd done all the like relevant scans, like brain scans, you know, MRI scans, everything like that. And they just don't know. It's like, as rubbish as it sounds, it was like it was a one in a million chance and it happened. And I signed it to say I'm aware that I could have a reaction from the drugs you're going to give me. And, you know, you don't... I look back at that moment now because I went on my own. My parents had, like, split up about a week before. It was really, really weird time, like, you know, massive for our family. And I just remember thinking, I don't want to stress them out. It's a day operation. My granddad dropped me off and my mum was going to come pick me up after work. So I was trying to keep it chill for everyone. I'm sitting in, like, this room on my own just signing this paperwork. And you just, in that moment, you just have no idea you're signing something that's going to change your life forever.
I mean, yeah, I can really relate to that, Esme. I've had to sign that on behalf of my husband once. And, you know, in the moment, actually, you don't actually have an alternative either, depending on, you know, what's happening at the time. You might not have an alternative, but you have to sign it. And I guess maybe you just think, you know, it's like anything. You go to the dentist, they might say, oh, can you sign this before we give you an anaesthetic? You just sign it because it's like, of course.
Because you're going to do it.
Yeah, you have
You're going to have the operation.
Yeah, but you have to take the responsibility or the kind of, but you don't really know what the responsibility is when you when you do that. Gosh, and yeah, also as a parent listening to this, my gosh, what your parents must have been, you know, it's absolutely terrifying to see your child ill or suffering, but to not have any answers. I think that's the most scary bit. It's like causation for me. If something has cause and effect, I'm a rational person, I can take that on. But when someone goes, oh, we don't really know, and it's very rare risk, or, you know, once in a blue moon, like you said, but it happens.
Yeah.
So where do you go from there?
Yeah, and I think like that was the big point I made about 17 and then 18. Like I became an adult. I did. I really did in that moment because I couldn't bear the thought of my parents worrying about me. I couldn't bear it. I literally thought if they leave here at 9 o'clock, go home and they're laying in bed feeling sick about the thought. You know, if I was a lot younger, you don't rationalise like that, but I was old enough to think this is going to hurt. So I remember when they come in, I was in high spirit. I don't know if this is where it all started for me. I don't know if this was my breakthrough. But I would make sure they didn't think I was suffering.
No,
I didn't cry in front of them. I didn't complain. I would laugh about situations. They'd take me outside in a wheelchair and, you know, I would just be happy. And I would go into physio on my own and deal with it on my own. And for me, that was my motivation, was my parents, because there was nothing they could do. It was completely out of their hands. So, you know, worry is a waste of imagination, and that's all they would have been doing. And I just couldn't bear the thought of adding to it.
Wow. I mean, the fact you had that, you know, that awareness and that insight to be able to do that, you know, at such a young age. And there's a couple of things I'm thinking as you're talking then. One is that, you know, we know the mind is incredibly powerful, and there's so much science-based evidence talking around, you know, negative, positive, neutral thinking. And I don't know, it just strikes me that, you know, do you think that in a way that helped and aided with your recovery? You know, if you know, we've told before about how powerful hope is, and the fact that if someone is told there's absolutely no hope, no way, you know, and if your energy's down, your negative thinking, all of that, you, your body responds, and equally in the other way, you know, do you think that did help you to recover?
Do you know what? I'm going to be so real with this here, because I'd love to like sell the dream and be like, oh, if you're really positive, then amazing things will happen and your mindset, you know, changes everything. But on a real with this, yeah, 100% my positivity and pushing through and putting on a brave face got me through it, 100%. However, it comes at a price. It's not gone. You've got to pay that back. And that's with everything in life. We can put on brave faces and fight and be positive, and of course, I believe, you know, I will preach about it every single day, that, you know, what you think and what you believe and feel, you can make happen for, you know, for real for yourself. But it comes at a cost. You can't not deal with it after. And that's where I learned that a lot. I became numb through that experience, where I was so positive and pushing and I'm going to get through this and I'm amazing and I will walk again and the universe has got my side. Ask for it, believe it, receive it, live it. But 2 months later, after I got out, like I said, you have to pay that back. You have to pay back the sort of money you borrowed, you know, the currency of positivity that you borrowed. And I definitely felt this like numbness where you say things, you know, like, oh, you're positive and you're this and you're that. It got to a point where I couldn't feel bad things or fear or worry because I'd almost like numbed it out. And I thought that was positive. I thought I was so tough. Later in life, I'm talking like maybe 7-8 years later, then I dealt with it.
That's interesting. Because we need the human experience, right? We need both. You know, you experience the good, the bad, everything in between, and that's it. Every emotion is valuable. If you're feeling fear, if you're feeling, you know, anxiety, stress, these things, from a physical and chemical perspective, they do actually serve a purpose. So as you said, I guess if you're kind of numb to that and you're like, your mind is shifted into one gear and one gear only, it's not, you're also smart, so it's not reality.
Of course, and that is the thing with it. I'm a firm believer, like I said, of, you know, being positive and pushing yourself and believing you can do things, but making sure now I know that afterwards you still deal with the emotions that didn't come up during that, because they are there.
Yeah.
You know, I was grieving, I was dealing with loss. I was, you know, I lost my dance college place. I lost the life that I had planned out. I lost confidence in myself, security in myself. I was so scared I was going to fall over or it's going to happen again. And I had fear all in me. But I think where I had this positive approach and like I'd won in a way, I walked again, I'd won. I numbed all of that out and it was always going to come back. And that's why, you know, I encourage people all the time now, you know, be positive, but also take time to feel the other things that are there. And that's what people don't do a lot of. And that's why it comes back when, you know, in times that they least expect it. That's why where I think panic attacks come from and anxiety attacks come from, places that haven't been dealt with.
Squashing it down, you can only squash it down for so long. And I guess, you know, I mean, going through, you went through the process with physiotherapy and as you said, you did, you walked again. But like, you know, after that you had fear of, you know, things happening to you again physically. You know, how else did you, I guess kind of rebuild your sense of identity? Because as you said, you were going to be a dancer and then that changed. And then, you know, where did you, did anyone help and support you and guide you, or did you just kind of figure it out?
I think like I said, my parents had broke up, you know, from a marriage, and we had a family of six, and they'd split up a week before it happened. So I obviously came out 3 weeks after, you know, the accident happened, and I was living in a whole new reality. I was learning to walk again and learning to move again and learning to do all the things I did before. I also wasn't going to dance college. I didn't have a job to go to, anything like that. And my parents weren't together. I've got a brother with special needs, and I had a younger sister who was 11 years old. My older sister was at university. It was a whole new reality for me. And I think, to get through that was, I suppose I did have to do a lot of it on my own. And it's not that I didn't have people around me, because I absolutely did. But again, it comes down to me. And it came down to me not wanting help. I didn't want to disturb my mum, disturb my dad. I just wanted to get through it. And like I said, there was a really dark patch that I went through, and I just felt horrendous. And I felt a lot of resentment. It's the first time in my life I'd felt resentment in a really horrendous way. My mum, like, raised me very well, you know, to be competitive and, you know, to have jealousy, but in a healthy way. And she was very good at that. So I never really felt, like, the evilness of resentment or the poison of it, and I did.
Right.
Like, I hated my friends who were at dance college. But I mean, like, sickening. Right. Like, I hated them to the core. I couldn't go on Facebook and see their photos they're uploading and their new friends they'd made at college and things like that. And that took a while. And I'm so glad I went through that. So glad, because I couldn't feel that ever again now. I, like, almost got it out of my system.
That's interesting. Because the injustice, I guess, is maybe at that time you're thinking, well, it's unfair. Why me? I didn't do anything to cause this, deserve this. But why do you say, it's so interesting, why do you say that you're glad that you felt that?
I just think, like, a lot of things I say, and it sounds a bit sadistic, but when I've gone through really hellish things, I'm glad they've happened, because I almost feel sorry for people who haven't felt that, because they're never going to know and never going to grow. And I just think, because I felt resentment to the point where it sickened me, I will never go back to that place again. Like, thank God. And I'm like 28 now. Thank God I got rid of it then. Yeah. I don't want to be 40 years old, 50 years old, feeling that, what I felt, because, you know, I want to be, you know, wiser by then. So I I suppose, again, it goes back to that growing up quickly bit. You know, at 18, I'd felt a lot of things that people won't feel for a lifetime. And I'm so lucky and happy because I know, you know, it's given me compassion and it's given me empathy and it's helped me look into situations and actually look at people and identify that they are probably going through something similar. So I just feel blessed to have gone through some really bad times.
Wow. Yeah, so many lessons in there. I don't know if you've ever heard of the Iron Cowboy, but he talks about wishing for everyone to face rock bottom.
Yeah.
And it's like a strange thing where he says, you know, when you face rock bottom, there's only one way to go.
Yeah.
You know, there's only one way. So when people talk about, oh, you're so strong, or oh, you've overcome this, or you're, it's like, it's out of necessity, you know? And it's like, for, as you just described, for a lot of people, although in a way it's like, oh, I wouldn't wish this on them, but actually you would, because you learn so much from times, challenging times, out of necessity. And without those challenges, you know, it's so easy to kind of, I guess, stay in our comfort zone, coast through this kind of middle, this middle feeling where we don't, you know, have to be, I guess, really challenged. Not challenged in a way of like, you know, challenge yourself. Really challenged. Like, I'm talking, you know, as you said, hellish pain, you know, suffering. But from it, I don't know anyone who's suffered anything like that and not said, you know what, thank God I did.
Yeah.
Because look at who I am, where I am, my life today, and the view on the world. It's almost like it takes off those blockers, those sunglasses, those kind of the blindfold that many people live their life wearing.
Yeah.
It just rips that off and suddenly your eyes are wide open to life, to experiences, to gratitude in a different way. You know, people talk about gratitude a lot now.
Yeah.
There's gratitude and then there's gratitude. You know, it's like your eyes are wide open.
It. Yeah. And okay, this is the thing. So you said, like, you know, from paralyzed to running up marathon, and that's exactly it. The reason I am where I am today is because I went through that, and this is how I then got into fitness, because I made it my mission that every person should feel how I felt, and I can do that through exercise. I have the opportunity to give people the feeling of, you know, insecurity, being vulnerable, out of their comfort zone, in pain, through an exercise as simple as a plank. I can make people feel insecure, vulnerable, you know, at rock bottom with a plank. And this is the thing, exactly what you said. People don't choose to, right? We're so spoiled in this day and age that we live in that we don't need to face adversity every day anymore. You know, my great grandma faced adversity every day because she had, I mean, millions of kids, just a crazy woman. And she would work in three jobs, and she was a single parent because, you know, my grandfather died in the war and she never met anyone. She raised her family on her own. She faced adversity every day just to bath them, clean them, give them food, right? Every day. We live in a time where we don't need to face adversity. And when it does come, oh my God, we're not prepared. I look at the generation of my younger sister, she's 21, and I think she is living in a generation where they don't face much adversity. And when it does come, they don't really know what to do. And that's where exercise became my passion and became my life, because I was like, okay, I've got the opportunity to put people in a state of adversity every single day by using a simple plank or a sprint or lifting a weight they've never lifted. And that's where, for me, fitness is. I don't care about body image. I don't care about six packs. I don't care about that. Science will give you a six pack if you work out and eat well to the average person. For me, exercise is mindset. It's about how can I be this person in my workout and then translate it to being that person outside my workout. If I can hold a plank for 10 seconds longer this week, then I can go and approach my boss for 10 seconds longer outside of my workout. You know, so for me, it's always about translating it. And this is how, from being paralyzed to doing what I'm doing now, this is where the passion came from. It was, I've been put there, not out of choice. So let me do the hard, horrible bit and let me teach you what I learned and help you get through a workout, meaning you can hopefully then get through things outside the studio.
Absolutely love that. I am sitting here, you're preaching my language, and I just feel, I hope that people can feel it, you know, like you hear it, I hope they can feel it, because it's so true. And as you said, you know, putting yourself in discomfort through lifting a heavy weight or taking on that sprint, or, you know, pushing yourself to run 10 more minutes than you think you can, not 10 more seconds, 10 more minutes. The thing about it for me is, I often say to people, when you, the mind and the body, like, the feedback loop goes both ways, right? So when you're running and you're telling your mind that you can endure, You can endure. You can endure. You can endure. So as you said, when there's a challenge that comes up, maybe not a physical challenge, mentally, you know you can endure. You've done it before. You can do it again. Yeah. So that's what I often say. You know, I talk about running a lot. I know people know me for that. But it's just, you can apply these things. It's not just a, you know, motivational Pinterest quote. It's real. You feel it, you know? Amazing. All right. So let's talk. I mentioned in the intro that you were on SAS Who Dares Wins. Yeah. You were incredible. I mean, firstly, were you prepared? Because I feel like now the show, maybe it's just more, maybe just I'm more aware of it. Mm. But when you were on the show, were you prepared? Were you aware? Did you know what you were going into? And the second part of the question is, what did you learn about yourself during that process?
So in terms of being prepared, it's impossible to be. I think in your head, before you go, you think, I am as prepared as I can be, but you get there and it all goes out the window, because there is no possible way to prepare yourself for what happens in there. Like, because it's a TV show, it's very hard as a viewer to understand that it's minute on the minute every single day. Like, there's no such thing as time, and there's no such thing as a day anymore, okay? So we don't have days. It's just hours by hours by hours by hours. Your day is 24 hours. It's not like you're going to sleep and then wake up. It just is what it is. You get about 3 hours sleep in that time, wherever that might be, and whatever time of day it might be. You get fed at whatever time they want to feed you. And you have no idea what's going to happen. I think because it's a TV show, you under the illusion that they go, okay, in 5 hours, we're going to meet here and you're going to jump into freezing cold water. So we'll meet you there. You know, get yourself ready, have a little nap, have a snack, and we'll meet you there. It's not, you know, you can be laying in bed and an hour later you're under freezing cold water. And so in terms of preparation, nah. You're sleep deprived, food deprived, and your anxiety is through the roof. So that's the preparation side of it. What I learned from it massively was about living in the minute. And it's like what you said earlier about Pinterest quotes. Like, I hate all the cheesiness of like, live like for the moment and all of that. And you see it and I'm like, oh yeah, it's just cheesy. And I preach it, I say to people, live for the moment, live it. But I actually lived in the minute for the first time in my life. I thought I was doing it already, I weren't. And what I mean by that is we have a schedule. So right now, you and I have a schedule just in our head. We know we're going to be here, and then I'm going to go off there, I'm going to do this, and I'll go and have dinner, I'll probably get to bed at this time. We had our schedules wiped in there. So our only choice and option was to trust. Just trust in what was going to happen next. Mm. Trust in the minute. And like I said, you could be 1 minute you're laying down, the next minute you're outside doing burpees in the freezing cold. So one thing I took from it was I would wake up every day before I went there and my schedule would run through my head the minute I opened my eyes. And we probably all do this. And you're like, right, I'm going to wake up, go there, go to work, do that meeting. But I'm going to get into bed at 9 o'clock tonight. And we wish our day away. Mm. Like, how often do we wake up and go, I can't wait to get back into bed tonight, I'm so tired. And you almost say, like, I'm going to get through the day.
Yeah.
And you do. I used to do it a lot before SES. I'd wake up in the morning, the first thought would be, can't wait to get back into bed, so tired, get through it. And you reel off your schedule. Since coming back from there, I wake up and whatever is in front of me in that minute is in front of me. So like, if I'm brushing my teeth, I'm brushing my teeth. It does not matter that I'm going to get the train at 9 o'clock because I'm going to get it. Mm. It does not matter if I've got dinner plans at 6 p.m. because 6 p.m. is going to come along, hopefully, because it might not. But in, you know, ordinary circumstances, 6 o'clock's coming. So why worry? I used to always as well say I was here with you, but I knew I had a big meeting later. I'd be here with you, but thinking of the meeting. Mm. I don't do that anymore. So I think one of the biggest things I learned in there was to truly live in the minute and delete my schedule mentally, because my schedule's there. Mm. I don't have to think. My schedule's written down. So why am I thinking about my schedule in my day? Mm. It's there.
And I guess you didn't have that option, because what I'm thinking when you're saying that is about control. So a lot of it for me, you know, I like to plan, I like to go, okay, I'm going to do this, as you said, do that. We all have a schedule, whatever that looks like.
Yeah.
But for me, I think the element of the unknown, when you said about feeling anxious, that's what would make you feel anxious, because you don't know, as you said, when you're going to eat, or, you know, and that, as you said about us being spoiled, we live in this abundance. You know, it's like if you're hungry, grab a snack, take something in your bag. You know, if you don't want to cook, get that Deliveroo. You know, you can get 24 hours food, and even down to the basic things like, you know, I was talking to my son the other day around, you know, food waste and trying to encourage, you know, him to think deeper, not to say to him, don't waste food. Like, what does that mean?
Food waste.
Yeah, and I kind of gave him this example, which I thought was really powerful, around a carrot. And it sounds basic, but I basically said to him, okay, if we cook, say, for example, 10 carrots and you don't eat them all and you put them in the bin, or you put one in the bin, just one, let's think about how long it took. If I said to you, can you go and, you know, grow another carrot? So it's like you might plant the thing, you might water the soil, you got to wait for the sun, the sun's got to grow, month. It might be however long, and then you get that one carrot, you're going to wash it, you're going to peel it, you're going to prep it, and then I'm just going to throw it in the bin. You know, it's like that thing of like, look at all the energy, the water, the thing that's taken to create something. But now, even when it comes to things like baking bread, making a cake, back in the day, it might take you half an hour, you know, do the thing, knead the bread, put it in the fridge, do the thing. Now it's like instant, just grab it off the shelf. If you don't eat it, chuck it in the bin, you know? So I think I'm going off on a tangent now.
No, food waste, it's a metaphor. Random. The carrot is a metaphor.
Yeah, random. But I think my point is that it's this element of, A, we know we can get things really quickly, really instantly. It's like this, you know, really fast culture, fast, throwaway. Secondly, it's that thing of control, knowing that you can always get it. So I think that's what would freak me out as somebody who eats a lot. When you were saying you don't know when they're going to feed you, that would freak me out because I know I'd be thinking, like, I'm hungry. Okay, there's hunger, then there's hunger,
and then there's needing
I'm
it.
Feeling ill. Yeah. And I think I would really struggle with the idea that, okay, sleep deprivation, I'm a parent, I feel like maybe, you know, I'm sure it gets you, and I'm sure you suffer. But yeah, the physical training, not knowing what's coming, not knowing as well. I mean, these things weren't optional, right? You can't opt out. No. So yeah, I mean,
you just, yeah, in terms of that, if you go, you go. You make that choice, you go and you leave and you go home. And other than that, you do everything. That's your option. Go home.
So the option out is to kind of surrender and say, you hand in the number, and it's not like a failure, but essentially it's you saying,
I'm done. I've hit my breaking point.
And did you think about handing in that number?
To be honest with you, no. And the main thing for me about that, and it's a shame that really you can't watch my journey on there, because obviously it is a TV show and, you know, it's edited to show, like, you know, everybody says there's a lot of us in there and things like that. And my journey was, you know, pretty quiet. I did get very far through the process. However, in terms of that, in terms of the TV show, for me, it was my journey, and I, you know, I really love the journey I had. And my point of going on there as well was I wanted to be broken. And it sounds, again, sadistic, but I don't know my breaking point, and it is quite alarming. And I'll tell you a story, what happened recently, where it did get alarming outside of SAS, but I don't know my breaking point. I got sent home. And the reason I got sent home was because, just in case anyone hasn't watched the show, you're carrying a Bergen on your back, massive rucksack. It's 23 kilos all the time. I am 5'1" and I weighed 50 kilos in there. So we're talking nearly half my body weight on my back. There was 9 of us left, and I'm going to the tallest person, 6'4", 100 kilos, carrying 23 kilos on his back. So it's all about equality, understand. But when we go through like ratio and getting scientific with it, when Ant Middleton says, Esme, James, race to the top of that mountain, you've got a 6'4" guy, 100 kilos, with 23 kilos in his back, racing a 5'1". You know, in terms of my mental state, I was 100. I was 100. In terms of physicality, there's no way I was going to beat him up there scientifically. I'm carrying half a body weight, he's carrying a quarter. Mm. And that's where it came down to, unfortunately for me, was I was the last one to the top of the mountain. And the saddest thing about it is I was given my everything. Mm. And if it was based on effort and, you know, how hard you were trying and what you were going through to get there, I would have been at the front, you know, if we could base it on that. So for me, I feel like my journey on SAS, I didn't get to my breaking point. I didn't get to the point where I was like, I'm done.
You're going
to
quit, yeah.
Yeah. And so it left me leaving there going, I still don't know it. Mm. So that was the sort of devastating thing for me, because, you know, science played
physical,
a part.
Yeah, it was a physical
thing. It played
thing.
A massive part in it, because I got to day 9 from just, you know, my mental state, because I was the smallest, and I mean the smallest. Yep. Like, I fireman carried an 85 kilo man. Like, I did everything I was told to do. I never once quit. So for me, it was really hard. It was a hard blow to take, you know, really hard in that moment when he sent me home, because I thought, I've done everything to keep up with them and I still got to the top of the mountain.
Yeah, but that's why you can be proud, isn't it? Because you fought to the end. You know, you didn't quit. Your mind was strong. Your body was strong. You did everything they asked of you. And as you said, you know, it is what it is. Mm. But you know, you can be proud that you gave your 100. You know, you don't have to go away and think, oh, you know what? I wish I'd done more. You did it.
And that's where, like, your ego does, like, completely, like, just put your ego to the side. Like, for me, people watching a TV show and you're seeing all these people talking about other people, oh, my God, they're so amazing, they're so strong, they're so this. And for me, you lose your ego with it all. You're just like, I know my story, I know what happened in there for me, and I felt good about my journey. And in a way, I'm kind of glad it wasn't showcased, like, how they wanted to showcase it, because I knew my story. Mm-hmm. And that was nice for me to be able to keep that as, like, my truth.
Yeah.
So it was good.
Well, you were amazing. And I think anybody who watches those shows, it's so, you know, you can't even imagine, as you said, you're at home, you're comfortable.
I know.
You know, you're on your sofa, you might have a little snack. You can watch it and go, wow, that looks hard. No idea. You know, I've got other friends who've done it, you know, and it's crazy.
Yeah.
So now, you know, there's no stopping you. You'd feel like, you know, you've had to face so many things. Why aren't you just going to put your feet up? You know, chill out. But you're doing ultramarathons.
Yeah.
So was that kind of a part of this? You know, I want to know my breaking point. How did you, why did you say, right, okay, the next challenge is going to be an endurance race?
So for me, I only realise more recently why I've been doing these crazy, stupid challenges. At the time when I was doing them, I was saying yes to them, and then people were asking, why do you do it? And I just kind of just answer, like, very vaguely, like, I hadn't really thought about it. And then I came to the realisation, I was speaking to someone and they asked, and it genuinely came out of my mouth, and I just said, because I can. And they were like, what do you mean? And I was like, is that it? You can do it? And I said exactly that. Like, I can do it. And until it gets to the day that someone offers me a challenge, an opportunity that I have to say no, I will say yes. Because the saddest thing is, this is the saddest thing about it, and it's the truth, one day we're going to have to say no. And we're going to have to say no to the things that were actually on our doorstep and then, you know, on our fingertips. And we're going to look back and we're going to be like, oh my God, I could have done that 10 times over and now I can't even do it once. And that's where one part of my motivation comes from. I know what it's like to not be able to do something, so why the hell would I say no? And if someone says, do you want to run a marathon? Not really, but yeah, I can, so why would I not? And that's where the sort of marathon started for me, was I got offered a marathon spot by Twice the Health Girls. They said, will you join our team and run the marathon? I sat on the sofa, I looked at it and I thought, you can, it's going to be horrendous. I hadn't run for 6 years after being paralysed because I had a problem with one of my legs. It used to just go dead while I was running. So I gave up on running for 6 years, and I loved running before. And I thought, yeah, I've been running, I think, for 6 months. And they asked me if I wanted to run a marathon, which was in about 8 months' time. And I just remember, no, it wasn't. It was in 4 months. It was in December. The marathon was April. And I remember looking at my phone and I just put, yeah. I actually, do you know what the worst thing is? I actually tried to find a reason, an excuse to say no to them. I sat thinking, right, what could I say? I could say, like, oh, I've only been running for 6 months since I, you know, was paralysed, so probably not. Or maybe I'll say, like, oh, you know, April's a busy month for me in terms of, there was no reason for me not to do it. So that's where it came from. This is the most important thing. There are people out there that can't. Right now, there are people listening to this right now who can't do something. So do it for them. I have people in my life that can't. My brother's not very well. He has heart problems. There are a million things that he wishes he could do that he can't. So why would I not? So my motivation comes from others, being able to do it for them. But yeah, mainly, if you can say yes to it, just say it. Just say it. Because one day, and it hurts me even to say it now, we're going to have to say no, both of us sitting there, anyone listening. And it could be circumstance, injury, age. Like, one day we're going to have to say no and it's going to hurt so bad.
Yep. I hear you. And today, I've said this before, as you just said, one day you won't be able to, but today is not that day. So don't put it off as well. Because the other thing is people go, oh, well, I will.
Next year.
Yeah,
tomorrow.
Next year. Or not today or tomorrow. You know, I'm busy. Yeah. And as you said, it's kind of like one day, it's if you can,
yeah,
do it. You're not going to regret it. You're probably going to learn loads. You're going to have, you know, but you know, all the things that we talk about, you know, like the experience, meeting new people, motivating others.
Yeah.
I think you don't even need to figure out initially why.
Yeah.
Just start.
Yeah. And it's like one of the biggest like things that I have learned is nobody can do everything, but everyone can do something. And it's like anyone sitting listening to this right now, there is something you can do. You can't do everything. but there is something you can do. You might not be able to climb a mountain, but you can go for a walk. You might not be able to run a marathon right now, but you can start with 5K. You know, and it's that concept of there's too many people sitting there putting other people on a pedestal and watching them do it, saying, yeah, but.
Don't underestimate. Don't underestimate yourself.
And that is the biggest thing for me. Stop yeah, butting people. Like, one of the biggest things I say to people if I go and do speeches and I go in and I say, the first thing I want to say to you is, don't yeah, but me while I'm speaking to you today. Because I don't know everything. I have not, anything I'm talking about now, I speak to, you know, people in speeches or in my classes or on panels or whatever it is. I'm not saying I know everything. I'm just saying what I know. And I'm sharing it with you. And the biggest thing that I think we do every day is, yeah, but people. So you could say something now and be like, oh, yeah, so like I went for a 5K run this morning, but yeah, but you're a really good runner. Or like, you know, like people say, yeah, but they've come from a wealthy background. Yeah, but they've got a support system. Yeah, but they've got a partner. Yeah, but they don't have kids. Yeah, but, and we do it every single day. We're guilty of it every, yeah, but stop yeah, butting people, because you have no idea what they've come from to get to that 5K or get to that partner they've got or get to the wealth that they're in. You have no idea. That's a massive thing for me, is people are sitting there every day putting people on pedestals saying, yeah, but they have got this, that and that. You have no idea. So start with you. Stop worrying about other people. Mind your own business.
Stay in your lane.
You know, don't compare your chapter one to someone else's chapter 13. Just start with you. What can you do? What can you say yes to? And just do it.
Absolutely. This, you see, I told you it's going to be gold. I told you, if you ain't feeling motivated after this, I don't know what you're doing, because this is the gold.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Okay, Esme, let's talk about the Power Hour, as this is the show.
Yeah.
So, you probably know my Power Hour, right? Mm-hmm. I'm an early bird. I'm telling people to get up and get after it. So I'd love to know, do you have a morning routine? I'm sure you do. What does it involve and what time does it start?
So for me, it's, it's probably similar to you as well, in terms of like one day I might be up at one time and then another time, depending on when I'm working, if I've got early clients, if I've not. And actually, interestingly, there was your podcast that you were talking about, the questions that you ask yourself in the morning, the six questions that you ask yourself in the morning. And when I heard you say that and you were like, oh yeah, I do these six questions and I answer them, it's mad, because I think we all, in a weird way, do that in our own way. Mm-hmm. Do you see what I mean? So whether you're getting out a pen and paper and writing them out and doing it, every morning I feel like we have a script. Mm-hmm. And the script that I was talking about earlier, which is the one of, oh, I can't wait to come back to bed later. You know, that script. My script, my day always starts with, today is not a chore, it's a gift. The minute you can get into that frame of mind, everything you do from that moment, you start seeing the beauty in it. Like, people see things as chores, like making the bed. Oh, I've got to make the bed. No, it's not a chore, it's a gift, because you've got a bed to sleep in. Oh, I've got to go to work. Thank God you've got a job. Oh, I've got to make breakfast and clean the dishes afterwards. Thank God you can afford food. So my day always starts with that first instinct that I say when I wake up, today's not a chore, it's a gift. And I think what I'm about to do, because you know when you have those mornings where you wake up, you're like, what day is it?
Yep.
What time is it? What am I doing? And then you forget. And then, so the first thing I do is come to terms with the day. So I wake up, where am I? What am I about to do? How lucky am I? And it's like what you were saying earlier about gratitude. Gratitude is medicine. And, you know, saying, feeling gratitude, that's the difference. So for me, people are being grateful by going, oh, thank you for my job and thank you for my food and thank you, but you've got to feel it. So for me, the first thing I do in the morning is feel grateful for what I am about to do. Like, feel it. Not just go, oh, I'm so grateful, I'm about to go and train my PT. Feel the gratitude of, there's someone waiting for me that's willing to, you know, pay me to share my professional, you know, training with them and my words that I have to say they want to hear. Like, how lucky is that? So, yeah, I think for me, it always starts with, you know, opening my eyes and getting my head into the right frame of mind, because it can change your whole day if you wake up and don't do that. You know, you can wake up so miserable. But, yeah, in terms of, like, what I do, I suppose it's so different every day. I suppose I always have that. I get out of bed, make my bed.
Is there anything you avoid? Is there anything you say, okay, first thing, you know, you said you're getting your mind in the game. So you're consciously deciding, okay, I'm going to feel grateful. I'm going to feel excited about what I'm doing today. Yeah. I'm going to look forward to it. I'm going to get my head in the game to get that energy, which is why you're such a beam of energy. So is there anything that you avoid that you know is going to kind of knock you off of that?
Reaching for my phone has been like a new one for me. When I was working, full time. I was head of fitness, so I managed a whole team of instructors. From the minute I woke up, it would be phone, because it would be like, is every instructor in the gym, in their classes? Has the gym open? Is everything going ahead? Has an instructor turned up? And I would reach for my phone, and honestly, my heart would race. I was so scared to turn my phone over and see it all. And I learned a lot from that, because a lot of anxiety came from that, and like fatigue and exhaustion came just from that turning of my phone. So one of the things I try and do in the morning is not look at my phone. Mm-hmm. I try and get up and just spend 5-10 minutes like getting up and doing the bits that I need to do and then look at it. So I suppose that's something I try and avoid. Another thing though as well is, we've all had it, right? When you have those mornings where you get up and you actually just do not want to be awake in that day, or like present in that, or like, I don't want to sound like deep with this, but just exist in that day. And it's a feeling that I hope more people get, but maybe don't admit it, because otherwise I'd be worried to think that, okay, because I think this is something that's really important for me to share. Because when you say to me, you're this beam of energy and you're positive and you're this, I've got to make it clear that when I say I wake up and I go through this process and I'm grateful for what I've got and all of this, it doesn't mean that I don't feel rubbish. It doesn't mean that I don't wake up some days just thinking, I can't be bothered. I don't want to do today. I don't want to see that person. I don't want to be me. I don't want to be me in my body doing this. The reason I do these things is because it's habits and it's tools that I've put in place to make sure I don't stay feeling bad all day. And sorry if this is going off topic, but I do think it's got a lot to do with that power hour of, we can look at people and think, again, oh, it's all right for them because they're just really happy. They're naturally really positive. They've got a really good life. And a story that I always share is my best friend growing up. She is the happiest, smiliest, most joyful person to be around. And if you met her now, and she came into the room, you'd be like, oh my God, she's just so funny and fun and energetic, and she's got two kids and she's got a husband, and her laugh is infectious and she's amazing. Now, my friend, when we were 17, she lost her mum suddenly, her dad and then her older brother. So by the time we were 21, she'd lost her mum, dad and older brother. And you would let her be, you would give her every right to hate life, to not get up, to not go seize the day, to not raise a family of kids, to not go to work. You'd give her every right. If you went, she's given up at life, oh, why? Well, she lost her mum, dad and brother. Fair. We'd give her every right. However, she is one of the happiest, most joyful people in my life. The reason she is like this is because she practices every day that.
It's a choice.
It's a choice. Mm-hmm. She puts in daily habits and tools. She knows that if she starts feeling this, doing that, be proactive. She lost her family, so she created a new family. She lost the ability to celebrate Mother's Day and Father's Day, so now she celebrates Father's Day with her husband, who is now the dad. She has found a way to celebrate and to change the feelings of feeling negative and useless and not wanting to exist. And I think it's so important that people know that, because, like, it's the same with you. I could look at you, you know, people listening to this podcast look at you, oh, yeah, she's just full of life. She's so motivated to run and she's so motivated. And, you know, she's got, you know, her son and her life is just brilliant and beautiful and beaming. It's because you choose to do it. And I think we need to make it clear. And if you're listening right now and you are someone that, you know, is categorized the same way that us two are, if you're listening right now, you need to take a moment to understand that you are making a choice to be happy and never to feel guilty for being happy and never feel categorised where people are going, oh, it's all right for you and you're so lucky. It's not luck. So it's one sort of group of people I want to speak to right now are the people that are known as the positive happy friend. Like, I want to speak to you and say, I know you were choosing to do that and you work on being that and it hurts.
And you're not exempt.
So much.
You're not exempt, as you just said about me. You know, that's the what I hope people will understand is that no one is exempt. And yes, I do hope to, you know, have a big ambition, you know. And like you said, I do these practices, these behaviours, these habits to get myself in the mindset that I want to live my life in, to create an extraordinary life. But it is, you know, a practice and and a choice every single day. But I'm not exempt from adversity. Of course, we all are. We all have things that we have to face. We all have failures. We all have rejections. We all make mistakes. We all have things that, you know what, sometimes as well, I think in the world now, it's almost like because we might share things on Instagram or do stories or host a podcast, or people maybe think that they do know everything, when actually, as you said, you know, if you're that happy, motivated, beaming, all of that for other people, doesn't mean that A, that's 100% of the time, and you can never be down or you can never feel, you know, how you feel. I think I have sometimes moments where I'm like, you know what, you're allowed to feel like this instead of just pretending or faking it or whatever. Just feel it for the rest of the day, or for I don't know, for an hour. Just feel it. Just allow, as I said, all these different human emotions, whether it's envy, whether it's anger, whether it's sadness, whether it's rejection, feel the feeling. Don't squash it. Don't ignore it and go, yeah, but actually, I'm going to be grateful. I'm going to be happy. You can be all of those things. They're not mutually exclusive. You know, I can be grateful and happy for what I've got while still striving for more. You know, I think it's really brilliant, actually, that you did bring that up, because I'm sure there's lots of people, we're all guilty of it sometimes, of going, oh my gosh, you know, that guy, that girl, is absolutely wicked. They've got it all going on. Like, it must be great to be them.
Yeah.
But we never know.
And blessed. And I think as well, like, another question sort of like posed to me is, you seem really happy and positive and, you know, great all the time. Do you ever have down days? And when people ask me that question, I get it quite a lot in panels. When it opens out to the audience to open questions out to me, it always comes up. Every panel I've ever done, speech I've ever done, when it's a Q&A, always, Esme, you seem so positive and happy all the time. Do you ever have down days? And I'm like, yeah.
Of course, yeah.
And they're really bad. Like, and it's like what you said then, you literally took the words out of my mouth, is when you have these days, have them. Get into bed, cry, scream, be angry, turn your phone off, don't even brush your teeth, don't shower, just lay in a mess. But the important thing is open the curtains, let the sunlight in, and live your life afterwards. And I think that's where talking to, you know, one group of people, the people who, you know, are expected to be happy and this all the time. But, you know, also I want to speak out to the people who, if you do right now, if you're sitting out there right now feeling like you're failing at being happy, or life's not worth living, or, you know, you don't feel like you're doing the best that you can do, please just trust me when I say there is hope, and I promise there is. Please don't look at people who are naturally happy or blessed and think that they're in a different category. They have been you, and I promise you that. Me, Adrienne, sitting here, we can both safely say, I hope that we have been that person and felt that feeling. And like I said earlier, it was dark and it was deep. I do wake up sometimes and just go, oh, I don't know if I want to today. And the important thing is, I've worked so hard over the years to find tools and habit changes that will help me get out of that. Find your habit changes, find your tools, find the light that is going to get you out of that. Because if you feel stuck right now and you feel like we're talking about Power Hour and we're doing so well at it, you can do it too. It's not one person can and one person can't. You can do it too. And you know, Adrienne gives you so many tips. Listen to them, and please don't listen thinking, yeah, but I'm not that person. Yeah, but I can't do it. Yeah, but again, please listen to the stuff that she says, because it is incredible, and believe you can do it, because everybody can. And I just hate the thought of anyone feeling stuck right now that they're in a different category, because you're not. Yeah. It might be a bit harder for you, of course, and, you know, people are in different situations and circumstances, but you have the ability to be what you know, look at as someone who is lucky and blessed and happy and beaming.
Yeah.
Everybody has that option. And, you know, a podcast like this is sitting there waiting for you to take it, listen to it, and do it. Because it's real.
Yeah, thank you for saying that, Ismir. And I really hope that the listeners of the show, even by listening to the show, like you just said, you've not like Instagram, you scrolled through 2 seconds, you've chosen to commit 45 minutes, you know, of your, it's a long time. I don't take that for granted when I think, wow, someone's listening to what we have to say for maybe even an hour out of their day. So even just by doing that, you know, it's like listening and feeling motivated, you know, that's great, but that's the start. So do, you know, take action, do something, and anything, just do something. Amazing. Okay, so before I ask you my closing question, I don't want this episode to end. Can you tell the listeners where they can find you? Where can they see you online? How can they get in touch?
So on Instagram, they can find me on there. So I'm Esme_LDN. You don't know.
Yes.
I'm really worried one day I'm going to like move.
Oh, I mean, you can imagine, we have the same.
I know.
So mine's LDN too. And I've actually been abroad. So for anyone listening, they're like, what are you talking about? The last three letters of both of our Instagram accounts is LDN, because we live in London or work in London. So I've been to hotels before in America where they assume that that's my surname. So I've had like, welcome, like Mrs. London. And I'm like, okay, whatever.
I would take that though.
Yeah, I'll go with it. All right. My closing question, Esme, is all about time. And it is, if you had one extra hour every single day, from now on you have 25 hours in your day, what would you use that extra hour to do?
I would use that extra hour to hang out with Esme.
Yes. Yes.
Just hang out with Esme.
Chill.
Spend some time with her. Ask her if she's all right, what you've been up to, you know, what you got planned for the rest of the day.
Check in.
Yeah, just check in with Es and spend some time with her, because apparently she's actually well all right, and I don't check in with her enough and ask her, and I don't hang out with her enough and laugh at her jokes, and people laugh at Ez's jokes, so I might have a laugh with her sometimes.
I love that. I mean, we didn't even get to talk about this, like party girl, but yeah, Esme, definitely work hard, play hard, train hard, do all of the things with a smile on your face. Thank you so much for giving us your time, Esme, for being on the show. I know that people are going to absolutely love this episode, especially with everything that is going on right now. You know, we can't get away from the fact it's a really insane time for so many people with the virus, with perhaps being isolated from loved ones, perhaps, you know, work being cancelled, holidays being cancelled, maybe family members who are due to visit from other sides of the world. So I really hope that this week, whatever is going on in your life, I hope this episode has helped to boost your mood today. Please do share it and get in touch if you've enjoyed the show. Remember, you can rate and review it on iTunes, get in touch on IG. We love all of that. Have a fantastic week. Thanks for listening. Thanks, Esme.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.